amounts to perverting the act of disclosing, erschließen, into an act of closing off, verschließen. For what is said is always understood proximally as saying something, that is, an uncovering something. Thus, by its very nature, idle talk is a closing off, since to go back to the ground of what is talked about is something which it leaves undone. This closing off is aggravated afresh by the fact that an understanding of what is talked about is supposedly reached in idle talk. Because of this, idle talk discourages any new inquiry and any disputation, and in a peculiar way suppresses them and holds them back. This way in which things have been interpreted in idle talk has already established itself in Dasein. There are many things with which we first become acquainted in this way, and there is not a little which never gets beyond such an average understanding. This everyday way in which things have been interpreted is one into which Dasein has grown in the first instance, with never a possibility of extrication. In it, out of it, and against it, all genuine understanding, interpreting, and communicating, all rediscovering and appropriating anew, are performed. In no case is a Dasein untouched and unseduced by this way in which things have been interpreted, set before the open country of a world in itself, so that it just beholds what it encounters. The dominance of the public way in which things have been interpreted has already been decisive even for the possibilities of having a mood, that is, for the basic way in which Dasein lets the world matter to it. The they prescribes one's state of mind and determines what and how one sees. Idle talk, which closes things off in the way we have designated, is the kind of being which belongs to Dasein's understanding when that understanding has been uprooted. But idle talk does not occur as a condition which is present at hand in something present at hand. Idle talk has been uprooted existentially, and this uprooting is constant. Ontologically, this means that when Dasein maintains itself in idle talk, it is, as being in the world, cut off from its primary and primordially genuine relationships of being towards the world, towards Dasein with, and towards its very being in. Such a Dasein keeps floating, unattached, in einer Schwebe. Yet in so doing, it is always alongside the world, with others, and towards itself. To be uprooted in this manner is a possibility of being only for an entity whose disclosedness is constituted by discourse as characterized by understanding and states of mind. That is to say, for an entity whose disclosedness in such an ontologically constitutive state is it's there, it's in the world. Far from amounting to a not being of Dasein, this uprooting is rather Dasein's most everyday and most stubborn reality. Yet the obviousness and self-assurance of the average ways in which things have been interpreted are such that while the particular Dasein drifts along towards an ever-increasing groundlessness as it floats, the uncanniness of this floating remains hidden from it under their protecting shelter.
Section 36.
Curiosity. In our analysis of understanding and of the disclosedness of the there in general, we have alluded to the lumen naturale, natural light, and designated the disclosedness of being in as Dasein's clearing, in which it first becomes possible to have something like sight. Our conception of sight has been gained by looking at the basic kind of disclosure which is characteristic of Dasein, namely understanding, in the sense of the genuine appropriation of those entities towards which Dasein can comport itself in accordance with its essential possibilities of being. The basic state of sight shows itself in a peculiar tendency of being which belongs to everydayness, the tendency towards seeing. We designate this tendency by the term curiosity, Neugier, which characteristically is not confined to seeing but expresses the tendency towards a peculiar way of letting the world be encountered by us in perception. Our aim in interpreting this phenomenon is in principle one which is existential ontological. We do not restrict ourselves to an orientation towards cognition. Even at an early date, and in Greek philosophy, This was no accident. Cognition was conceived in terms of the desire to see. The treatise, which stands first in the collection of Aristotle's treatises on ontology, begins with the sentence, Pantes anthropai tu edenai oregontai pousei. All humans naturally desire knowledge. The care for seeing is essential to man's being. This remark introduces an investigation in which Aristotle seeks to uncover the source of all learned exploration of entities and their being by deriving it from that species of Dasein's being which we have just mentioned. This Greek interpretation of the existential genesis of science is not accidental. It brings to explicit understanding what has already been sketched out beforehand in the principle of Parmenides. Toga auto no ein estin te kai enai, for knowing and being are the same thing. Being is that which shows itself in the pure perception which belongs to beholding, and only by such seeing does being get discovered. Primordial and genuine truth lies in pure beholding. This thesis has remained the foundation of Western philosophy ever since. The Hegelian dialectic found in it its motivating conception, and is possible only on the basis of it. The remarkable priority of seeing was noticed particularly by Augustine in connection with his interpretation of concupiscentia, concupiscence, ad oculos enim videre proprie pertinet. Seeing belongs properly to the eyes. But we even use this word seeing for the other senses when we devote them to cognizing. For we do not say, hear how it glows, or smell how it glistens, or taste how it shines, or feel how it flashes. But we say of each, see. We say that all this is seen. We not only say, see how that shines when the eyes alone can perceive it, but we even say, see how that sounds, see how that is scented, see how that tastes, see how hard that is. Therefore, the experience of the senses in general is designated as the lust of the eyes. For when the issue is one of knowing something, the other senses, by a certain resemblance, take to themselves the function of seeing, a function in which the eyes have priority. What is to be said about this tendency just to perceive? Which existential state of Dasein will become intelligible in the phenomenon of curiosity? Being in the world is proximally absorbed in the world of concern. This concern is guided by circumspection, which discovers the ready to hand and preserves it as thus discovered. Whenever we have something to contribute or perform, circumspection gives us the route for proceeding with it, the means of carrying it out, the right opportunity, the appropriate moment. Concern may come to rest in the sense of one's interrupting the performance and taking a rest, or it can do so by getting it finished. In rest, concern does not disappear. Circumspection, however, becomes free and is no longer bound to the world of work. When we take a rest, care subsides into circumspection which has been set free. In the world of work, circumspective discovering has de-severing as the character of its being. When circumspection has been set free, there is no longer anything ready to hand which we must concern ourselves with bringing close. But as essentially de-severant, this circumspection provides itself with new possibilities of de-severing. This means that it tends away from what is most closely ready to hand and into a far and alien world. Care becomes concern with the possibilities of seeing the world merely as it looks while one tarries and takes a rest. Dasein seeks what is far away simply in order to bring it close to itself in the way it looks. Dasein lets itself be carried along, mitnehmen, solely by the looks of the world. In this kind of being, it concerns itself with becoming rid of itself as being in the world, and rid of its being alongside that which, in the closest everyday manner, is ready to hand. When curiosity has become free, however, it concerns itself with seeing, not in order to understand what is seen, that is to come into a being towards it, but just in order to see. It seeks novelty only in order to leap from it anew to another novelty. In this kind of seeing, that which is an issue for care does not lie in grasping something and being knowingly in the truth. It lies rather in its possibilities of abandoning itself to the world. Therefore, curiosity is characterized by a specific way of not tarrying alongside what is closest. Consequently, it does not seek the leisure of tarrying observantly, but rather seeks restlessness and the excitement of continual novelty and changing encounters. In not tarrying, curiosity is concerned with the constant possibility of distraction. Curiosity has nothing to do with observing entities and marveling at them. Thaumatzein, to marvel. To be amazed to the point of not understanding is something in which it has no interest. Rather, it concerns itself with a kind of knowing, but just in order to have known. Both this not tarrying in the environment with which one concerns oneself and this distraction by new possibilities are constitutive items for curiosity. And upon these is founded the third essential characteristic of this phenomenon, which we call the character of never dwelling anywhere, Aufenthaltslosigkeit. Curiosity is everywhere and nowhere. This mode of being in the world reveals a new kind of being of everyday Dasein, a kind in which Dasein is constantly uprooting itself. Idle talk controls even the ways in which one may be curious. It says what one must have read and seen. In being everywhere and nowhere, curiosity is delivered over to idle talk. These two everyday modes of being for discourse and sight are not just present at hand side by side in their tendency to uproot, but either of these ways to be drags the other one with it. Curiosity, for which nothing is closed off, and idle talk, for which there is nothing that is not understood, provide themselves, that is, the Dasein, which is in this manner, dem so seienden Dasein, with the guarantee of a life which supposedly is genuinely lively. But with this supposition, a third phenomenon now shows itself, by which the disclosedness of everyday Dasein is characterized.
Section 37.
Ambiguity. When, in our everyday being with one another, we encounter the sort of thing which is accessible to everyone and about which anyone can say anything, it soon becomes impossible to decide what is disclosed in a genuine understanding and what is not. This ambiguity, Zweideutigkeit, extends not only to the world, but just as much to being with one another as such, and even to Dasein's being towards itself. Everything looks as if it were genuinely understood, genuinely taken hold of, genuinely spoken, though at bottom it is not, or else it does not look so, and yet at bottom it is. Ambiguity not only affects the way we avail ourselves of what is accessible for use and enjoyment, and the way we manage it, ambiguity has already established itself in the understanding as a potentiality for being, and in the way Dasein projects itself and presents itself with possibilities. Everyone is acquainted with what is up for discussion and what occurs, and everyone discusses it. But everyone also knows already how to talk about what has to happen first, about what is not yet up for discussion but really must be done. Already everyone has surmised and scented out in advance what others have also surmised and scented out. This being on the scent is, of course, based upon hearsay, for if anyone is genuinely on the scent of anything, he does not speak about it. And this is the most entangling way in which ambiguity presents Dasein's possibilities, so that they will already be stifled in their power. Even supposing that what they have surmised and scented out should some day be actually translated into deeds, ambiguity has already taken care that interest in what has been realized will promptly die away. Indeed, this interest persists in a kind of curiosity and idle talk only so long as there is a possibility of a non-committal, just surmising with someone else. Being in on it with someone, das mit dabei sein, when one is on the scent, and so long as one is on it, precludes one's allegiance when what has been surmised gets carried out. For in such a case, Dasein is in every case forced back on itself. Idle talk and curiosity lose their power and are already exacting their penalty. When confronted with the carrying through of what they have surmised together, Idle Talk readily establishes that they could have done that too, for they have indeed surmised it together. In the end, Idle Talk is even indignant that what it has surmised and constantly demanded now actually happens. In that case, indeed, the opportunity to keep on surmising has been snatched away. But when Dasein goes in for something in the reticence of carrying it through or even of genuinely breaking down on it, its time is a different time and, as seen by the public, an essentially slower time than that of Idle Talk, which lives at a faster rate. Idle Talk will thus long since have gone on to something else which is currently the very newest thing. That which was earlier surmise and has now been carried through has come too late if one looks at that which is newest. Idle Talk and curiosity take care in their ambiguity to ensure that what is genuinely and newly created is out of date as soon as it emerges before the public. Such a new creation can become free in its positive possibilities only if the Idle Talk, which covers it up, has become ineffective, and if the common interest has died away. In the ambiguity of the way things have been publicly interpreted, talking about things ahead of the game and making surmises about them curiously gets passed off as what is really happening, while taking action and carrying something through gets stamped as something merely subsequent and unimportant. Thus, Dasein's understanding in the they is constantly going wrong, versieht sich in its projects, as regards the genuine possibilities of being. Dasein is always unambiguously there, that is to say, in that public disclosedness of being with one another, where the loudest Idle Talk and the most ingenious curiosity keep things moving, where in an everyday manner everything, and at bottom nothing, is happening. This ambiguity is always tossing to curiosity that which it seeks, and it gives Idle Talk the semblance of having everything decided in it. But this kind of being of the disclosedness of being in the world dominates also being with one another as such. The other is proximally there in terms of what they have heard about him, what they say in their talk about him, and what they know about him. Into primordial being with one another, Idle Talk first slips itself in between. Everyone keeps his eye on the other first and next, watching how he will comport himself and what he will say in reply. Being with one another in the they is by no means an indifferent side-by-sideness in which everything has been settled, but rather an intent, ambiguous watching of one another, a secret and reciprocal listening in. Under the mask of for one another, an against one another is in play. In this connection, we must notice that ambiguity does not first arise from aiming explicitly at disguise or distortion, and that it is not something which the individual Dasein first conjures up. It is already implied in being with one another, as thrown being with one another in the world. Publicly, however, it is quite hidden, and they will always defend themselves against this interpretation of the kind of being, which belongs to the way things have been interpreted by the they, lest it should prove correct. It would be a misunderstanding if we were to seek to have the explication of these phenomena confirmed by looking to the they for agreement. The phenomena of Idle Talk, curiosity, and ambiguity have been set forth in such a manner as to indicate that they are already interconnected in their being. We must now grasp in an existential ontological manner the kind of being which belongs to this interconnection. The basic kind of being which belongs to everydayness is to be understood within the horizon of those structures of Dasein's being which have been hitherto obtained.
Section 38. Falling and Thrownness.
Idle Talk, curiosity, and ambiguity characterize the way in which, in an everyday manner, Dasein is its there, the disclosedness of being in the world. As definite existential characteristics, these are not present at hand in Dasein, but help to make up its being. In these, and in the way they are interconnected in their being, there is revealed a basic kind of being which belongs to everydayness. We call this the falling of Dasein. This term does not express any negative evaluation, but is used to signify that Dasein is proximally and for the most part alongside the world of its concern. This absorption in, aufgehen bei, has mostly the character of being lost in the publicness of the they. Dasein has, in the first instance, fallen away, abgefallen from itself, as an authentic potentiality for being itself, and has fallen into the world. Fallenness into the world means an absorption in being with one another, insofar as the latter is guided by idle talk, curiosity, and ambiguity. Through the interpretation of falling, what we have called the inauthenticity of Dasein may now be defined more precisely. On no account, however, do the terms inauthentic and non-authentic signify really not, as if in this mode of being Dasein were altogether to lose its being. Inauthenticity does not mean anything like being no longer in the world, but amounts rather to a quite distinctive kind of being in the world, the kind which is completely fascinated by the world and by the Dasein-with of others in the they. Not being itself, das nicht es selbst sein, functions as a positive possibility of that entity, which, in its essential concern, is absorbed in a world. This kind of not-being has to be conceived as that kind of being which is closest to Dasein and in which Dasein maintains itself for the most part. So neither must we take the fallenness of Dasein as a fall from a purer and higher primal status. Not only do we lack any experience of this ontically, but ontologically we lack any possibilities or clues for interpreting it. In falling, Dasein itself, as factical being in the world, is something from which it has already fallen away. And it has not fallen into some entity which it comes upon for the first time in the course of its being, or even one which it has not come upon at all. It has fallen into the world, which itself belongs to its being. Falling is a definite existential characteristic of Dasein itself. It makes no assertion about Dasein as something present at hand or about present at hand relations to entities from which Dasein is descended or with which Dasein has subsequently wound up in some sort of commercium, commerce, hence relationship. We would also misunderstand the ontologico-existential structure of falling if we were to ascribe to it the sense of a bad and deplorable ontical property of which perhaps more advanced stages of human culture might be able to rid themselves. Neither in our first allusion to being in the world as Dasein's basic state, nor in our characterization of its constitutive structural items, did we go beyond an analysis of the constitution of this kind of being and take note of its character as a phenomenon. We have indeed described concern and solicitude as the possible basic kinds of being in. But we did not discuss the question of the everyday kind of being of these ways in which one may be. We also showed that being in is something quite different from a mere confrontation, whether by way of observation or by way of action. That is, it is not the being present at hand together of a subject and an object. Nevertheless, it must still have seemed that being in the world has the function of a rigid framework, within which Dasein's possible ways of comporting itself towards its world run their course without touching the framework itself as regards its being. But this supposed framework itself helps make up the kind of being which is Dasein's. An existential mode of being in the world is documented in the phenomenon of falling. Idle talk discloses to Dasein a being towards its world, towards others, and towards itself, a being in which these are understood, but in a mode of groundless floating. Curiosity discloses everything and anything, yet in such a way that being in is everywhere and nowhere. Ambiguity hides nothing from Dasein's understanding, but only in order that being in the world should be suppressed in this uprooted everywhere and nowhere. By elucidating ontologically the kind of being belonging to everyday being in the world, as it shows through in these phenomena, we first arrive at an existentially adequate determination of Dasein's basic state, which is the structure that shows us the movement of falling. Idle talk and the way things have been publicly interpreted, which idle talk includes, constitute themselves in being with one another. Idle talk is not something present at hand for itself within the world, as a product detached from being with one another. And it is just as far from letting itself be volatilized to something universal which, because it belongs essentially to nobody, is really nothing and occurs as real only in the individual Dasein which speaks. Idle talk is the kind of being that belongs to being with one another itself. It does not first arise through certain circumstances which have effects upon Dasein from outside. But if Dasein itself, in idle talk and in the way things have been publicly interpreted, presents to itself the possibility of losing itself in the they and falling into groundlessness, this tells us that Dasein prepares for itself a constant temptation towards falling. Being in the world is in itself tempting, versucherisch. Since the way in which things have been publicly interpreted has already become a temptation to itself in this manner, it holds Dasein fast in its fallenness. Idle talk and ambiguity, having seen everything, having understood everything, develop the supposition that Dasein's disclosedness, which is so available and so prevalent, can guarantee to Dasein that all the possibilities of its being will be secure, genuine, and full. Through the self-certainty and decidedness of the they, it gets spread abroad increasingly that there is no need of authentic understanding or the state of mind that goes with it. The supposition of the they, that one is leading and sustaining a full and genuine life, brings Dasein a tranquility for which everything is in the best of order, and all doors are open. Falling, being in the world which tempts itself, is at the same time tranquilizing, beruhigend. However, this tranquility in inauthentic being does not seduce one into stagnation and inactivity, but drives one into uninhibited hustle, betriebs. Being fallen into the world does not now somehow come to rest. The tempting tranquilization aggravates the falling. With special regard to the interpretation of Dasein, the opinion may now arise that understanding the most alien cultures and synthesizing them with one's own may lead to Dasein's becoming for the first time thoroughly and genuinely enlightened about itself. Versatile curiosity and restlessly knowing it all masquerade as a universal understanding of Dasein. But at bottom it remains indefinite what is really to be understood, and the question has not even been asked. Nor has it been understood that understanding itself is a potentiality for being which must be made free in one's ownmost Dasein alone. When Dasein, tranquilized and understanding everything, thus compares itself with everything, it drifts along towards an alienation, Entfremdung, in which its ownmost potentiality for being is hidden from it. Falling, being in the world, is not only tempting and tranquilizing, it is at the same time alienating. Yet this alienation cannot mean that Dasein gets factically torn away from itself. On the contrary, this alienation drives it into a kind of being which borders on the most exaggerated self-dissection, tempting itself with all possibilities of explanation, so that the very characterologies and typologies which it has brought about are themselves already becoming something that cannot be surveyed at a glance. This alienation closes off from Dasein its authenticity and possibility, even if only the possibility of genuinely foundering. It does not, however, surrender Dasein to an entity which Dasein itself is not, but forces it into its inauthenticity, into a possible kind of being of itself. The alienation of falling, at once tempting and tranquilizing, leads by its own movement to Dasein's getting entangled, verfängt, in itself. The phenomena that we have pointed out, temptation, tranquilizing, alienation, and self-entangling, entanglement, characterize the specific kind of being which belongs to falling, This movement of Dasein in its own being we call its downward plunge, Absturz. Dasein plunges out of itself, into the groundlessness and nullity of inauthentic everydayness. But this plunge remains hidden from Dasein by the way things have been publicly interpreted, so much so indeed that it gets interpreted as a way of ascending and living concretely. This downward plunge into and within the groundlessness of the inauthentic being of the they has a kind of motion which constantly tears the understanding away from the projecting of authentic possibilities and into the tranquilized supposition that it possesses everything, or that everything is within its reach. Since the understanding is thus constantly torn away from authenticity and into the they, though always with a sham of authenticity, the movement of falling is characterized by turbulence, Wirbel. Falling is not only existentially determinative for being in the world. At the same time, turbulence makes manifest that the thrownness which can obtrude itself upon Dasein in its state of mind has the character of throwing and movement. Thrownness is neither a fact that is finished, nor a fact that is settled. Dasein's facticity is such that as long as it is what it is, Dasein remains in the throw, and is sucked into the turbulence of the they's inauthenticity. Thrownness, in which facticity lets itself be seen phenomenally, belongs to Dasein, for which, in its being, that very being is an issue. Dasein exists, factically. But now that falling has been exhibited, have we not set forth a phenomenon which speaks directly against the definition we have used in indicating the formal idea of existence? Can Dasein be conceived as an entity for which, in its being, its potentiality for being is an issue, if this entity, in its very everydayness, has lost itself and, in falling, lives away from itself? But falling into the world would be phenomenal evidence against the existentiality of Dasein only if Dasein were regarded as an isolated I or subject, as a self-point from which it moves away. In that case, the world would be an object. Falling into the world would then have to be reinterpreted ontologically as being present at hand, in the manner of an entity within the world. If, however, we keep in mind that Dasein's being is in the state of being in the world, as we have already pointed out, then it becomes manifest that falling as a kind of being of this being in affords us rather the most elemental evidence for Dasein's existentiality. In falling, nothing other than our potentiality for being in world is the issue, even if in the mode of inauthenticity. Dasein can fall only because, being in the world, understandingly with a state of mind, is an issue for it. On the other hand, authentic existence is not something which floats above falling everydayness. Existentially, it is only a modified way in which such everydayness is seized upon. The phenomenon of falling does not give us something like a night view of Dasein, a property which occurs ontically and may serve to round out the innocuous aspects of this entity. Falling reveals an essential ontological structure of Dasein itself. Far from determining its nocturnal side, it constitutes all Dasein's days in their everydayness. It follows that our existential ontological interpretation makes no ontical assertion about the corruption of human nature, not because the necessary evidence is lacking, but because the problematic of this interpretation is prior to any assertion about corruption or incorruption. Falling is conceived ontologically as a kind of motion. Ontically, we have not decided whether man is drunk with sin, and in the status corruptionis, state of corruption, whether he walks in the status integritatis, state of wholeness, the state of humans before the fall, or whether he finds himself in an intermediate stage, the status gratiae, state of grace. But insofar as any faith or world view makes any such assertions, and if it asserts anything about Dasein as being in the world, it must come back to the existential structures which we have set forth, provided that its assertions are to make a claim to conceptual understanding. The leading question of this chapter has been about the being of the there. Our theme has been the ontological constitution of the disclosedness, which essentially belongs to Dasein. The being of that disclosedness is constituted by states of mind, understanding, and discourse. Its everyday kind of being is characterized by idle talk, curiosity, and ambiguity. These show us the movement of falling, with temptation, tranquilizing, alienation, and entanglement as its essential characteristics. But with this analysis, the whole existential constitution of Dasein has been laid bare in its principal features. And we have obtained the phenomenal ground for a comprehensive interpretation of Dasein's being as care.
Chapter 6.
Care as the being of Dasein.
Section 39.
The question of the primordial totality of Dasein's structural whole. Being in the world is a structure which is primordially and constantly whole. In the preceding chapters, Division 1, chapters 2 to 5, this structure has been elucidated phenomenally as a whole, and also in its constitutive items, though always on this basis. The preliminary glance which we gave to the whole of this phenomenon in the beginning has now lost the emptiness of our first general sketch of it. To be sure, the constitution of the structural whole and its everyday kind of being is phenomenally so manifold that it can easily obstruct our looking at the whole as such phenomenologically in a way which is unified. But we may look at it more freely, and our unified view of it may be held in readiness more securely, if we now raise the question towards which we have been working in our preparatory fundamental analysis of Dasein in general. How is the totality of that structural whole which we have pointed out to be defined in an existential, ontological manner? Dasein exists factically. We shall inquire whether existentiality and facticity have an ontological unity, or whether facticity belongs essentially to existentiality. Because Dasein essentially has a state of mind belonging to it, Dasein has a kind of being in which it is brought before itself and becomes disclosed to itself in its thrownness. But thrownness as a kind of being belongs to an entity which in each case is its possibilities, and is them in such a way that it understands itself in these possibilities and in terms of them, projecting itself upon them. Being alongside the ready-to-hand belongs just as primordially to being in the world as does being with others. And being in the world is in each case for the sake of itself. The self, however, is proximally and for the most part inauthentic, the they-self. Being in the world is always fallen. Accordingly, Dasein's average everydayness can be defined as being in the world which is falling and disclosed, thrown and projecting, and for which its ownmost potentiality for being is an issue, both in its being alongside the world and in its being with others. Can we succeed in grasping this structural whole of Dasein's everydayness in its totality? Can Dasein's being be brought out in such a unitary manner that in terms of it, the essential equiprimordiality of the structures we have pointed out, as well as their existential possibilities of modification, will become intelligible? Does our present approach via the existential analytic provide us an avenue for arriving at this being phenomenally? To put it negatively, it is beyond question that the totality of the structural whole is not to be reached by building it up out of elements. For this, we would need an architect's plan. The being of Dasein, upon which the structural whole as such is ontologically supported, becomes accessible to us when we look all the way through this whole to a single, primordially unitary phenomenon, which is already in this whole in such a way that it provides the ontological foundation for each structural item in its structural possibility. Thus, we cannot interpret this comprehensively by a process of gathering up what we have hitherto gained and taking it all together. The question of Dasein's basic existential character is essentially different from that of the being, of something present at hand. Our everyday environmental experiencing, erfahren, which remains directed both ontically and ontologically towards entities within the world, is not the sort of thing which can present Dasein in an ontically primordial manner for ontological analysis. Similarly, our immanent perception of experiences, Erlebnissen, fails to provide a clue which is ontologically adequate. On the other hand, Dasein's being is not to be deduced from an idea of man. Does the interpretation of Dasein, which we have hitherto given, permit us to infer what Dasein, from its own standpoint, demands as the only appropriate ontico-ontological way of access to itself? An understanding of being belongs to Dasein's ontological structure. As something that is, seiend, it is disclosed to itself in its being. The kind of being which belongs to this discloseness is constituted by state of mind and understanding. Is there in Dasein an understanding state of mind in which Dasein has been disclosed to itself in some distinctive way? If the existential analytic of Dasein is to retain clarity in principle as to its function in fundamental ontology, then in order to master its provisional task of exhibiting Dasein's being, it must seek for one of the most far-reaching and most primordial possibilities of disclosure, one that lies in Dasein itself. The way of disclosure in which Dasein brings itself before itself must be such that in it Dasein becomes accessible as simplified in a certain manner. With what is thus disclosed, the structural totality of the being we seek must then come to light in an elemental way. As a state of mind which will satisfy these methodological requirements, the phenomenon of anxiety will be made basic for our analysis. In working out this basic state of mind and characterizing ontologically what is disclosed in it as such, we shall take the phenomenon of falling as our point of departure, and distinguish anxiety from the kindred phenomenon of fear, which we have analyzed earlier. As one of Dasein's possibilities of being, anxiety, together with Dasein itself as disclosed in it, provides the phenomenal basis for explicitly grasping Dasein's primordial totality of being. Dasein's being reveals itself as care. If we are to work out this basic existential phenomenon, we must distinguish it from phenomena which might be proximally identified with care, such as will, wish, addiction, and urge. Care cannot be derived from these since they themselves are founded upon it. Like every ontological analysis, the ontological interpretation of Dasein as care, with whatever we may gain from such an interpretation, lies far from what is accessible to the pre-ontological understanding of being or even to our ontical acquaintance with entities. It is not surprising that when the common understanding has regard to that with which it is only ontical familiarity, that which is known ontologically seems rather strange to it. In spite of this, even the ontical approach with which we have tried to interpret Dasein ontologically as care may appear far-fetched and theoretically contrived, to say nothing of the act of violence one might discern in our setting aside the confirmed traditional definition of man. Accordingly, our existential interpretation of Dasein as care requires pre-ontological confirmation. This lies in demonstrating that no sooner has Dasein expressed anything about itself to itself than it has already interpreted itself as care, cura, even though it has done so only pre-ontologically. The analytic of Dasein, which is proceeding towards the phenomenon of care, is to prepare the way for the problematic of fundamental ontology, the question of the meaning of being in general. In order that we may turn our glance explicitly upon this in the light of what we have gained, and go beyond the special task of an existentially a priori anthropology, we must look back and get a more penetrating grasp of the phenomena which are most intimately connected with our leading question, the question of being. These phenomena are those very ways of being which we have been hitherto explaining, readiness to hand and presence at hand. as attributes of entities within the world whose character is not that of Dasein. Because the ontological problematic of being has heretofore been understood primarily in the sense of presence at hand, reality, world actuality, while the nature of Dasein's being has remained ontologically undetermined, we need to discuss the ontological interconnections of care, worldhood, readiness to hand, and presence at hand, reality. This will lead to a more precise characterization of the concept of reality in the context of a discussion of the epistemological questions oriented by this idea, which have been raised in realism and idealism. Entities are, quite independently of the experience by which they are disclosed, the acquaintance in which they are discovered, and the grasping in which their nature is ascertained. But being is only in the understanding of those entities to whose being something like an understanding of being belongs. Hence, being can be something unconceptualized, but it never completely fails to be understood. In ontological problematics, being and truth have, from time immemorial, been brought together, if not entirely, identified. This is evidence that there is a necessary connection between being and understanding, even if it may perhaps be hidden in its primordial grounds. If we are to give an adequate preparation for the question of being, the phenomenon of truth must be ontologically clarified. This will be accomplished in the first instance on the basis of what we have gained in our foregoing interpretation, in connection with the phenomena of disclosedness and discoveredness, interpretation and assertion. Thus, our preparatory fundamental analysis of Dasein will conclude with the following themes: the basic state of mind of anxiety as a distinctive way in which Dasein is disclosed. Section 40. Dasein's being as care. Section 41. The confirmation of the existential interpretation of Dasein as care in terms of Dasein's pre-ontological way of interpreting itself. Section 42. Dasein, worldhood and reality. Section 43. Dasein, disclosedness and truth. Section 44.
Section 40.
The basic state of mind of anxiety as a distinctive way in which Dasein is disclosed. One of Dasein's possibilities of being is to give us ontical information about Dasein itself as an entity. Such information is possible only in that disclosedness which belongs to Dasein and which is grounded in state of mind and understanding. How far is anxiety a state of mind which is distinctive? How is it that in anxiety, Dasein gets brought before itself through its own being, so that we can define phenomenologically the character of the entity disclosed in anxiety, and define it as such in its being, or make adequate preparations for doing so? Since our aim is to proceed towards the being of the totality of the structural whole, we shall take as our point of departure the concrete analyses of falling which we have just carried through. Dasein's absorption in the they and its absorption in the world of its concern make manifest something like a fleeing of Dasein in the face of itself as an authentic potentiality for being itself. This phenomenon of Dasein's fleeing in the face of itself and in the face of its authenticity seems at least a suitable phenomenal basis for the following investigation. But to bring itself face to face with itself is precisely what Dasein does not do when it thus flees. It turns away from itself in accordance with its ownmost inertia, Zug, of falling. In investigating such phenomena, however, we must be careful not to confuse ontico-existentiell characterization with ontologico-existential interpretation, nor may we overlook the positive phenomenal bases provided for this interpretation by such a characterization. From an existentiell point of view, the authenticity of being oneself has of course been closed off and thrust aside in falling. But to be thus closed off is merely the privation of a disclosedness which manifests itself phenomenally in the fact that Dasein's fleeing is a fleeing in the face of itself, That in the face of which Dasein flees is precisely what Dasein comes up behind. Only to the extent that Dasein has been brought before itself in an ontologically essential manner, through whatever disclosedness belongs to it, can it flee in the face of that in the face of which it flees. To be sure, that in the face of which it flees is not grasped in thus turning away, upkeer, in falling, nor is it experienced even in turning thither, hinkeer. Rather, in turning away from it, it is disclosed there. This existentiel onticle turning away, by reason of its character as a disclosure, makes it phenomenally possible to grasp existential ontologically that in the face of which Dasein flees, and to grasp it as such. Within the onticle away from which such turning away implies, that in the face of which Dasein flees can be understood and conceptualized by turning thither, in a way which is phenomenologically interpretative. So in orienting our analysis by the phenomenon of falling, we are not in principle condemned to be without any prospect of learning something ontologically about the design disclosed in that phenomenon. On the contrary, here, least of all, has our interpretation been surrendered to an artificial way in which Dasein grasps itself. It merely carries out the explication of what Dasein itself ontically discloses. The possibility of proceeding towards Dasein's being by going along with it and following it up, mit und nachgehen, interpretatively with an understanding and the state of mind that goes with it, is the greater, the more primordial is that phenomenon which functions methodologically as a disclosive state of mind. It might be contended that anxiety performs some such function. We're not entirely unprepared for the analysis of anxiety. Of course, it still remains obscure how this is connected ontologically with fear. Obviously, these are kindred phenomena. This is betokened by the fact that, for the most part, they have not been distinguished from one another. That which is fear gets designated as anxiety, while that which has the character of anxiety gets called fear. We shall try to proceed towards the phenomenon of anxiety step by step. Dasein's falling into the they and the world of its concern is what we have called a fleeing in the face of itself. But one is not necessarily fleeing whenever one shrinks back in the face of something or turns away from it. Shrinking back in the face of what fear discloses, in the face of something threatening, is founded upon fear. And this shrinking back has the character of fleeing. Our interpretation of fear as a state of mind has shown that in each case, that in the face of which we fear is a detrimental entity within the world which comes from some definite region, but is close by and is bringing itself close, and yet might stay away. In falling, Dasein turns away from itself. That in the face of which it thus shrinks back must, in any case, be an entity with a character of threatening. Yet this entity has the same kind of being as the one that shrinks back. It is Dasein itself. That in the face of which it thus shrinks back cannot be taken as something fearsome, for anything fearsome is always encountered as an entity within the world. The only threatening which can be fearsome and which gets discovered in fear always comes from entities within the world. Thus, the turning away of falling is not a fleeing that is founded upon a fear of entities within the world. Fleeing that is so grounded is still less a character of this turning away, when what this turning away does is precisely to turn thither, towards entities within the world, by absorbing itself in them. The turning away of falling is grounded rather in anxiety, which in turn is what first makes fear possible. To understand this talk about Dasein's fleeing in the face of itself in falling, we must recall that being in the world is a basic state of Dasein. That in the face of which one has anxiety, das wovor der Angst, is being in the world as such. What is the difference phenomenally between that in the face of which anxiety is anxious, sich ängstet, and that in the face of which fear is afraid? That in the face of which one has anxiety is not an entity within the world. Thus it is essentially incapable of having an involvement. This threatening does not have the character of a definite detrimentality which reaches what is threatened, and which reaches it with definite regard to a special factical potentiality for being. That in the face of which one is anxious is completely indefinite. Not only does this indefiniteness leave factically undecided which entity within the world is threatening us, but it also tells us that entities within the world are not relevant at all. Nothing which is ready to hand or present at hand within the world functions as that in the face of which anxiety is anxious. Here the totality of involvements of the ready to hand and the present at hand discovered within the world is as such of no consequence. It collapses into itself. The world has the character of completely lacking significance. In anxiety, one does not encounter this thing or that thing which, as something threatening, must have an involvement. Accordingly, when something threatening brings itself close, anxiety does not see any definite here or yonder from which it comes. That in the face of which one has anxiety is characterized by the fact that what threatens is nowhere. Anxiety does not know what that in the face of which it is anxious is. Nowhere, however, does not signify nothing. This is where any region lies, and there too lies any disclosedness of the world for essentially spatial being in. Therefore, that which threatens cannot bring itself close from a definite direction within what is close by. It is already there, and yet nowhere. It is so close that it is oppressive and stifles one's breath, and yet it is nowhere. In that in the face of which one has anxiety, the it is nothing and nowhere becomes manifest. The obstinacy of the nothing and nowhere within the world means as a phenomenon that the world as such is that in the face of which one has anxiety. The utter insignificance which makes itself known in the nothing and nowhere does not signify that the world is absent, but tells us that entities within the world are of so little importance in themselves that on the basis of this insignificance of what is within the world in its worldhood is all that still obtrudes itself. What oppresses us is not this or that, nor is it the summation of everything present at hand. It is rather the possibility of the ready-to-hand in general. That is to say, it is the world itself. When anxiety has subsided, then in our everyday way of talking, we're accustomed to say that it was really nothing, and what it was indeed does get reached ontically by such a way of talking. Everyday discourse tends towards concerning itself with the ready to hand and talking about it. That in the face of which anxiety is anxious is nothing ready to hand within the world. But this nothing ready to hand, which only our everyday circumspective discourse understands, is not totally nothing. The nothing of readiness to hand is grounded in the most primordial something in the world. Ontologically, however, the world belongs essentially to Dasein's being as being in the world. So if the nothing, that is the world as such, exhibits itself as that in the face of which one has anxiety, this means that being in the world itself is that in the face of which anxiety is anxious. Being anxious discloses primordially and directly the world as world. It is not the case, say, that the world first gets thought of by deliberating about it, just by itself, without regard for the entities within the world, and that in the face of this world anxiety then arises. What is rather the case is that the world as world is disclosed first and foremost by anxiety as a mode of state of mind. This does not signify, however, that in anxiety the worldhood of the world gets conceptualized. Anxiety is not only anxiety in the face of something, but as a state of mind it is also anxiety about something. That which anxiety is profoundly anxious, sich abängstet about, is not a definite kind of being for Dasein or a definite possibility for it. Indeed, the threat itself is indefinite and therefore cannot penetrate threateningly to this or that factically concrete potentiality for being. That which anxiety is anxious about is being in the world itself. In anxiety, what is environmentally ready to hand sinks away. and so in general do entities within the world. The world can offer nothing more, and neither can the Dasein with of others. Anxiety thus takes away from Dasein the possibility of understanding itself, as it falls in terms of the world, and the way things have been publicly interpreted. Anxiety throws Dasein back upon that which it is anxious about, its authentic potentiality for being in the world. Anxiety individualizes Dasein for its ownmost being in the world, which, as something that understands, projects itself essentially upon possibilities. Therefore, with that which it is anxious about, anxiety discloses Dasein as being possible. Therefore, with that which it is anxious about, anxiety discloses Dasein as being possible, and indeed as the only kind of thing which it can be of its own accord, as something individualized in individualization, vereinzeltes in der Vereinzelung. Anxiety makes manifest in Dasein its being towards its own most potentiality for being, that is, its being free for the freedom of choosing itself and taking hold of itself. Anxiety brings Dasein face to face with its being free for, propensio in, the authenticity of its being, and for this authenticity as a possibility which it always is. But at the same time, this is the being to which Dasein, as being in the world, has been delivered over. That about which anxiety is anxious reveals itself as that in the face of which it is anxious, namely being in the world. The self-sameness of that in the face of which and that about which one has anxiety extends even to anxiousness, Sichängsten, itself. For, as a state of mind, anxiousness is a basic kind of being in the world. Here, the disclosure and the disclosed are existentially self-same in such a way that in the latter, the world has been disclosed as world, and being in has been disclosed as a potentiality for being, which is individualized, pure, and thrown. This makes it plain that with the phenomenon of anxiety, a distinctive state of mind has become a theme for interpretation. Anxiety individualizes Dasein and thus discloses it as solus ipse, itself alone. But this existential solipsism is so far from the displacement of putting an isolated subject-thing into the innocuous emptiness of a worldless occurring, that in an extreme sense what it does is precisely to bring Dasein face to face with its world as world, and thus bring it face to face with itself as being in the world. Again, everyday discourse and the everyday interpretation of Dasein furnish our most unbiased evidence that anxiety as a basic state of mind is disclosive in the manner we have shown. As we have said earlier, a state of mind makes manifest how one is. In anxiety, one feels uncanny. Here, the peculiar indefiniteness of that which Dasein finds itself alongside in anxiety comes proximally to expression, the nothing and nowhere. But here, uncanniness also means not being at home, das nicht zu Hause sein. In our first indication of the phenomenal character of Dasein's basic state and in our clarification of the existential meaning of being in, as distinguished from the categorical signification of insideness, being in was defined as residing alongside, being familiar with. This character of being in was then brought to view more concretely through the everyday publicness of the they, which brings tranquilized self-assurance, being at home with all its obviousness, into the average everydayness of Dasein. On the other hand, as Dasein falls, anxiety brings it back from its absorption in the world. Everyday familiarity collapses. Dasein has been individualized, but individualized as being in the world. Being in enters into the existential mode of the not at home. Nothing else is meant by our talk about uncanniness. By this time we can see phenomenally what falling as fleeing flees in the face of. It does not flee in the face of entities within the world. It does not flee in the face of entities within the world. These are precisely what it flees towards, as entities alongside which our concern, lost in the they, can dwell in tranquilized familiarity. When in falling we flee into the at-home of publicness, we flee in the face of the not-at-home. That is, we flee in the face of the uncanniness which lies in Dasein. In Dasein is thrown being in the world, which has been delivered over to itself in its being. This uncanniness pursues Dasein constantly and is a threat to its everyday lostness in the they, though not explicitly. This threat can go together factically with complete assurance and self-sufficiency in one's everyday concern. Anxiety can arise in the most innocuous situations, nor does it have any need for darkness, in which it is commonly easier for one to feel uncanny. In the dark there is emphatically nothing to see, though the very world itself is still there, and there more obtrusively. If we interpret Dasein's uncanniness from an existential ontological point of view, as a threat which reaches Dasein itself and which comes from Dasein itself, we're not contending that in factical anxiety too it has always been understood in this sense. When Dasein understands uncanniness in the everyday manner, it does so by turning away from it in falling. In this turning away, the not-at-home gets dimmed down. Yet the everydayness of this fleeing shows phenomenally that anxiety as a basic state of mind belongs to Dasein's essential state of being in the world, which, as one that is existential, is never present at hand but is itself always in a mode of factical being there, that is, in the mode of a state of mind. That kind of being in the world which is tranquilized and familiar is a mode of Dasein's uncanniness, not the reverse. From an existential ontological point of view, the not at home must be conceived as the more primordial phenomenon. And only because anxiety is always latent in being in the world can such being in the world as being, which is alongside the world, and which is concernful in its state of mind, ever be afraid. Fear is anxiety fallen into the world, inauthentic and as such hidden from itself. After all, the mood of uncanniness remains, factically, something for which we mostly have no existentiel understanding. Moreover, under the ascendancy of falling and publicness, real anxiety is rare. Anxiety is often conditioned by physiological factors. This fact, in its facticity, is a problem ontologically, not merely with regard to its ontical causation and course of development. Only because Dasein is anxious in the very depths of its being does it become possible for anxiety to be elicited physiologically. Even rarer than the existentiel fact of real anxiety are attempts to interpret this phenomenon according to the principles of its existential ontological constitution and function. The reasons for this lie partly in the general neglect of the existential analytic of Dasein, but more particularly in a failure to recognize the phenomenon of state of mind. Yet the factical rarity of anxiety as a phenomenon cannot deprive it of its fitness to take over a methodological function in principle for the existential analytic. On the contrary, the rarity of the phenomenon is an index that Dasein, which for the most part remains concealed from itself, in its authenticity because of the way in which things have been publicly interpreted by the they, becomes disclosable in a primordial sense in this basic state of mind. Of course, it is essential to every state of mind that in each case, being in the world should be fully disclosed, in all those items which are constitutive for it, world, being in, self. But in anxiety there lies the possibility of a disclosure which is quite distinctive, for anxiety individualizes. This individualization brings Dasein back from its falling and makes manifest to it that authenticity and inauthenticity are possibilities of its being. These basic possibilities of Dasein, and Dasein is in each case mine, show themselves in anxiety as they are in themselves, undisguised by entities within the world to which, proximally and for the most part, Dasein clings. How far has this existential interpretation of anxiety arrived at a phenomenal basis for answering the guiding question of the being of the totality of Dasein's structural whole?